Welcome to another episode of the Replant Bootcamp, the podcast for church renewal leaders where we listen, learn, and laugh together with boots on the ground church leaders. I'm your host, Jimbo Stewart. This podcast is sponsored by Church QuickSight by 180 Digital. Getting a website that your visitors and members will love doesn't have to be hard. Learn more at churchquicksight.com. Here we are back at it again, back at the boot camp. Hope you're ready for the next episode. Excited to have return guest Dr. Holmes, Dr. Luke Holmes, back with us, the resolution writer extraordinaire, here to talk to us about church revitalization now that he is officially a well-trained and educated certified expert.
Yeah, I learned from the best. What can I say? So, and you were there too.
Congrats. Congrats on graduating and finishing. It was fun to have you in class at Southwestern and made a lot of good connections there. And it's been fun to stay in touch ever since.
Yeah.
I got you on today. There's a specific article you wrote. We'll link it in the show notes, where you talk about revitalization triage. And you start off the article talking about the first thing that you got asked to do at a church was to fire the janitor. And that's what kind of helped spark for you thinking through this article and ways to think through how to lead change in revitalization. And it made me think of when we talk revitalization replanting, we talk through the characteristics a lot, the 13 characteristics. And the two that really came to mind to frame this conversation for me is first, tactical patience, which we say is the ability to skillfully implement change at a pace that is appropriate to a specific organization's health and needs. It's about having the discernment of knowing when something must be changed and how it should be changed. But then the other piece of that is organizational awareness. And we say a replanter with organizational awareness is adept at understanding how power dynamics work within the church, anticipating how changes would be received, recognizing where change may produce friction, and showing an awareness of how current practice and changes affected their position in the community in which they served. A lot of this is just that pace of change, which is unique in each revitalization. There's not an exact pace of change that you can go cookie cutter from one church to another. And so what you've done in this article is talked about how to analyze and figure out what to prioritize and how to go about figuring out the pace of change you should run.
Yeah, you know, I came to a church that was really in need of revitalization and was there a couple weeks, and they told me they wanted me to fire the janitor. Well, the deacons didn't want him to do it, and so they hadn't, and personnel committee wouldn't do it, and nobody else, so they just thought, well, wait till we get a new pastor. Now, in their defense, the janitor really did need fired. I mean,
yes,
she was really bad at the job and needed to be let go, but you know, to call a guy in and have him do that in his first 2 weeks is hard. I did end up firing her just on the spot and got fed up and didn't follow the rules, but nobody cared because that's what they wanted done.
Yeah, the first and only committee I ever created in my replant was for the purpose of firing the janitor. I had the opposite problem. I had an awful janitor, but he was kind of a mascot of the people. And so they really didn't want me to fire him, but he was not good at, I mean, it took him 3 days to vacuum the sanctuary, and we were not a mega church. And so I started like just hinting at the fact that I might fire the janitor, and I got a lot of pushback. And so I put those people who pushed back on the only committee I ever formed and made them evaluate his job performance over the next 6 months, and they ended up firing him. But it's amazing when they will pass that stuff off to you, let the new pastor do the dirty work.
Yeah, and it turns out whenever a new pastor comes, everybody's got an idea of what he needs to do to fix the church. He needs to get the rogue secretary in line, or he needs to get the children's minister to do her job, or needs to change the music, or any of these things. Everybody's got plans, and it's usually their personal pet peeve, the thing that bugs them. fix the bylaws or the roof, but start Sunday school or evangelism. But the thing is, a new pastor comes in and doesn't know up from down. He's studied the church and learned, but so far he's only seen their best foot forward in interviews, and he needs to learn about what really needs done at the church. And I think revitalization triage is a good way to help you do that.
Yeah, it's definitely, not only do you get pressure from the outside to change certain things when you get there that may not be the first things you should change, but there's also a little bit of personal pressure of the things you see that you think, oh gosh, man, I wish we could change that as quickly as possible. And I see a lot of guys go in and make some quick adjustments on things they shouldn't have and end up regretting it down the line. And so you've built this out around the idea of head, heart, hands, feet, vision. And so walk us through kind of a little bit of the thinking behind breaking it down into those categories.
Well, you know, in medical triage, you're kind of figuring out what's the most urgent things to fix. And, you know, in a church, you're doing the same thing. Well, then there are these categories to help give you areas on which to focus, like heart. Many churches just don't have a good spirit or a good attitude among their people. They're fighting or gossiping or worse. And a pastor might come in and start new evangelism, and lots of people join the church. But what good does it do if a lot of people join a fighting church? Mm. It's not going to fix what the big problem is, you know? Like a man who makes sure he brushes his teeth every night, but he's having a heart attack every day. You know, the heart is the problem. You do need to brush your teeth, but you need to focus on what's most important. Because when you have a bad heart, that affects all the other areas of your body, you know?
So this helps the pastor prioritize what issues to focus on first. So let's walk through one section at a time. What is the head? And when you think triage in a church, what is the head section?
Well, the head is the brains or the bylaws and policies of a church, I think, that keep it organized. Clifton says that most unhealthy churches care more about how a decision is made than what the decision is, that you got to follow all the rules. In these churches, the business meetings are dominated by talk about bylaws and who's doing what. In some of them, practically, just the way the documents are, you have a hard time revitalizing the church because it doesn't allow the pastor to make the decisions that need to be made, or it gives a group certain control over the church. Maybe there's a board or a planning committee or any of these things, and trying to figure out how to help the church get healthy organizationally in the things that give it structure. That's part of what the head is.
So regarding the head category, what are some warning signs the church's bylaws or structures are actually hindering health rather than promoting it?
I think when bylaws become the dominant topic of every meeting, you know, when they start focusing on, like I said, are you following all these rules? And of course, we need to do that. But in a healthy church, they allow you to make the right decision. And the outcome is more important than the process. I think another red flag would be, frankly, at many churches, there aren't bylaws and there isn't anything for them to go off of. That's a red flag because then the pastor really has no idea what he's doing. Lots of smaller churches, that's very often the case. And larger churches, we've seen that too.
Yeah.
Crazily,
well,
we've
seen some churches that, like, that wasn't an issue until it was a really big issue.
Right.
We see sometimes that it wasn't an issue till it was a really big issue.
Right.
And then you're like, oh, man, we probably should have had bylaws along the way.
Right.
Let me go off in a minute.
So that's the head section. Next is the heart. Describe for us what the heart section of this evaluation is.
Yeah, those churches that fight and bicker and gossip about everything. The meetings are dominated by bad attitudes. Often there's cliques within a church. They don't have a good spirit. They're not friendly to outsiders or even to each other.
So in the heart category, how would a pastor effectively address some of these deep-seated relational issues without getting caught in the crossfire?
lots of prayer and lots of time. Man, that just takes time.
Yeah.
That might be the hardest one to overcome because, but it's the same thing in our own bodies. I mean, a heart problem is dangerous. Mm-hmm. It poses when you have a bad heart, it affects all the other areas of your body. And, you know, I found in bylaws, you might have the best bylaws in the world, but if you have bad people, it doesn't matter. And you might have no bylaws and good people, and you'll get along just fine. And so that heart is so important.
Yeah, this is where the other characteristic I would bring in on this one in particular is the willingness to confront, which is, we say, is that when the replant pastor has a willingness to confront, they're able to willingly navigate conflict with directness, love, humility, patience, and wisdom, driven by a love for the church and her members, not by a need to be right, but in order to get us healthy. And so one of the things that Clifton always says is one of the first assignments you have is warming or rewarming the hearts of the members back to the gospel. And I've often thought that one of the biggest mistakes we make is trying to solve strategic problems, our spiritual problems, with strategic solutions.
Yes.
Because hearts aren't ready yet. Hearts aren't ready to deal with those things. And so they're going to fight. They're going to push back. And so a church, you say in the article, a church with a bad heart might have good programs, but the fighting and bad spirit will eventually creep into all areas of the church and bring those good ministries down.
Yeah. And that's kind of what the horror end of this is, the spiritual problems and the strategic problems. And it's not to say there aren't strategic things, but what good does it do if your heart is no good? And I think the only way to have a revitalized church is to have revitalized people. And it's a lot harder to change people than it is to change the curtains. And you know how hard it is to change the curtains.
I think one of the worst things I ever did was change the chandeliers. I made a huge mistake, man. This was a huge oversight. And I thought I was okay because it was a senior adult man in the church. His wife had passed away, and she always hated the chandeliers. And so to honor her, he donated the money to replace these old, outdated chandeliers that were huge, way too big for our sanctuary, with kind of just more modern, simplistic chandeliers. And so it was too early on, and I was an idiot. I did not think to run that by anybody else in the church. And so I got some of the new people that with volunteer labor, and we just start doing it. And then I ran to the store to grab something, and I'm at the store, and one of the new people calls me and was like, "You need to come back now." And I come back, and there are three ladies there ready to burn me at the stake over changing those. It became such a huge deal. We had already changed them. It was done. We weren't going to change them back. And I literally, in a meeting, was like, "Okay, so who wants one of these chandeliers? I'll just give you. You can have one of the old chandeliers." And so a handful of people, like, I ended up giving them all away. I don't know what they did with them. They're way too big to put in your house unless you live in a mansion. But I had one left, and I did prank the lady who got chewed out the most, and I just hit it on her porch. And so, but it was,
funny.
I didn't know any better. I didn't know any better.
I know.
But
and
yeah,
it's easier
changing
to do
hearts
that than it is to change hearts.
Absolutely. All right, talk to us about the hands section.
Well, church's hands are kind of the practical things, the things that allow it to get ministry done. Often programs, I think, is what you would think of. Some churches, they have unhealthy hands because they're keeping up pet programs, things that were relevant a long time ago but don't matter anymore, things that don't really fit into the vision of what they need to do. Often in churches, these things can be really good ministries, food banks, clothes closets, things that are important but might not fit into the ministry vision of the new pastor. And then when you add on things like kids programs and youth and senior adults, you can really get some entrenched opinions about what needs to be done and what needs to stay.
So how do you help people determine which of these that you address and which that you don't address?
Well, I heard once that a new pastor has to figure out what he needs to kill and what he needs to let die. And some things you just stop feeding it and it'll die eventually. And some things are so bad. I was at a church and we had a ministry called Swamp Kids. Super Wonder Awesome Magnificent Potential. And so it had some challenges for other reasons, but it needed to, you know, you just got to cut the head off of the snake. Sometimes you need to do that. Yeah. That one, I cut the head off and it came back from the dead. That's a whole story. But you got to figure out what you need to kill and what you need to let die. And sometimes a new pastor needs to just kind of let something die a quiet death. And that's easier than him. If you kill the wrong thing, everything will come down on you. But if you take the time to just not promote it, not talk about it, maybe even cut the budget if you're that brave over time, and just kind of let it work itself out, I think you can get a handle on those things.
Yeah, the church I replanted, the mother church, had, when they took on this church before I got there, and they sought out a pastor to take it on and selected me. So there was already a relationship between the mother church and the replant. And the mother church had communicated to the replant that they would not continue to operate the WMU the way that they had for forever, because they had kind of their own way of doing missions, education, and support. Nobody had told me any of that. And here's the other thing is, I did not grow up entrenched in Southern Baptist right. life. So I honestly didn't even know what the WMU was before I arrived. And I'm there, I preach in view of a call, there's a luncheon afterwards, and with no context of what WMU is or this conversation that's apparently happened between the mother church and the replant, we're at the luncheon, and this little old lady walks up to me, and she doesn't say her name, she doesn't introduce herself, she just walks up, looks me in the eyes, and says, "What do you have against little old women coming and praying over missionaries at the church?"
What's wrong with you, Jambo? Come on.
I was like, nothing? I mean, I don't know. I have nothing against that. And so she goes, "So you don't mind if some little old ladies come up here and pray for missionaries once a month?" And I was like, "No, I don't have a problem with that." And she was like, "Well, they said they're killing the WMU." And I was like, "I have no idea what we're talking about right now." And so I go to the mother church, and they're like, "Yeah, it's the way they do it. We need to go a different direction." Well, I was like, "I'm not going to kill it. Like, I've already right. been set up now where I can't." And so I was like, we'll starve it. I'm not going to fund right. it. I'm not going to budget right. it. And I'm not going to promote it from the platform. But I'm not going to stop these ladies from coming." Well, what had happened that was hilarious to me is, like, five or six other churches in our city had shut down their WMU meetings. So now we have all the WMU ladies from our whole side of town meeting once a month. Then I eventually make that lady mad enough that she leaves, but she's still got a key like everybody else on the west side of Jacksonville. And so they just keep meeting, even though nobody leading it actually is a member of our church anymore. And so it had a rogue WMU group for the west side of Jacksonville.
Yeah, paying attention to what programs are important and what people show up for and what they don't. And I had a pastor ask me last week about, should he kill Sunday night service? He only has 30 or 40 women show up to pray. It's like, 30 or 40? It's like, what? It was like, on Sunday night. I'm like, why would you stop that? Why would you? He didn't think it was important. I'm like, man, pay attention to what's going on, you know? Look at these programs that have value and feed those.
Well, I think it's sometimes we have our own preconceived notions of what is the right program or not the right program. And I think you got to be willing to, if you're someone who is naturally bent towards doing things that are new and moving away from things that are old, don't be too quick to do that, because some of the best things we ever did were Wednesday night prayer meetings and fifth Sunday fellowships and you know, some kind of old school ideas that worked really well and were effective for us in ministry. All right, so that's the hand section. Talk to us about feet.
You know, churches' feet enable it to share the gospel with its community. But the fact is, there are some churches that are just lazy. They require a lot of motivation to get up and go out and evangelize and do the work. Other church might just think we have who we have and that's enough. We don't really want to grow. They're not interested in outreach and growth. You know, the country club mentality of a church. These things are harder because they'll all say the right things, but they won't actually get up and do it. I've not met a church that doesn't say they believe in missions and outreach, but I've met a lot that don't actually do it.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the characteristics we also point to with this is missional focus. Research has shown us, this actually came from Dr. Stephen Hudson's PhD research at Southern Seminary when he did a mixed methods competency mapping of church revitalization. And he says, replanters with a missional focus make it a priority to equip and mobilize the congregation to live life on mission in their community and beyond for the sake of Christ and his gospel. And I think this is one of the biggest pushes we have to do. Typically, it's in my experience, churches in need of revitalization have lost their fervor for being on mission one reason or another. So this does have to be a big piece of it. The fifth one you bring up is vision. Talk to us about what you mean with that.
Yeah. Vision, you know, the eyes of a church, that's really important. It's what gives it purpose and direction. And, you know, there's lots of churches that have no outside vision. They have no reason for getting together besides that's what they do. And then it elevates these traditions to such a high level. And when you change them, it causes lots of stress and all those things. Still other churches suffer from competing visions, too much vision, too many things going on. They're trying to be the church that does the food bank and the clothes closet and the orphan care and the swamp kids and all of these things and do everything under the sun, and you just can't, especially in a smaller church with a smaller amount of people. Everyone then begins thinking their ministry is the most effective. You end up with siloed ministries that compete for budget and resources and all those things. But a pastor has so much power to shape a church's vision, influencing the direction and purpose. And when he does this correctly and kind of diagnoses that this church is suffering from lack of vision, then he can get them a long ways in the right direction.
So with competing visions, how can a pastor navigate this without alienating different groups within the church?
Man, that's really hard. And a lot of it comes down to just some of those things like we said before, just letting things die when they need to. And really just a bunch of it is what you promote and what you praise, what you talk about from the pulpit. When I came here to Emmanuel Baptist where I'm at, I said we're going to try to visit every home within a mile of the church. Talked about our 1 mile mission field. And I just said that a lot. It's not really anything magic. I just said it a lot to where people started saying it too. Yep. And that became a vision just because I repeated it. A pastor has one of the critics a pastor has and long entrenched Sunday school directors or treasurers or anything. The pastor has the pulpit every week. And he has the power to shape the vision so much from there if he'll take the time to do it correctly.
Yeah, I mean, vision doesn't have to be super clever and, you know, beautifully crafted. It just needs to be clear and compelling, and you need to say it a lot. Yeah. And honestly, if it can be clear and compelling and you just say it a lot, that's kind of the main pieces of getting a good vision out there. So these are the categories, but how does a pastor walk into a church that he's been called to revitalize and triage this? How does he now start to prioritize where his focus needs to be?
I think the thing he does is you just pay attention. You don't listen to what other people say. You get their opinion, sure. And you listen, and you'll probably have people in your office on the first week. But really what you do is you look at the budget yourself. You look at the past 5 years. You read all the old business meeting minutes. See what names keep coming up, what they're talking about, what they're discussing. You listen to see what's the most valuable, what gets the space in the bulletin. You know, pastors are smart people, and I think if they'll figure it out, you can kind of see. Sometimes it's obvious. You know, when there's an explosion at a plant and a guy has a piece of rebar sticking out of his leg, well, that's obvious. Sometimes it takes a careful diagnosis and talking to people and listening. I think it takes a lot more listening than talking to diagnose what's really going on in a church.
Well, Luke, how can we be praying for you in your ministry?
Yeah, I take all the prayer I can get. I've been here for just a year, and God has really blessed us. Change is hard. We've been to the last church 12 years and revitalized there. And God led us here and has opened up some doors for good ministry, and it's been effective. But now at a year, we're just kind of at a place where everybody, the church and myself, kind of figures out what we really got in this whole trade. Yeah. And so we're learning to work with each other and move forward. Right now, we're, like I said, we're trying to visit every home within a mile of our church, and we've seen some good fruit from that. We live in a very poor and impoverished neighborhood, and so there's lots of need around us.
We'll be praying for you with that. Will you pray for the listeners to have wisdom as they triage and try to lead well in their churches? Yeah.
Dear Lord, thank you for the chance to talk about your church, the thing that Christ gave his life for. Father, I pray that as pastors look at their church, Lord, that they would see it with your eyes as something full of great value and worth the work and the effort. Father, I pray that you will give pastors wisdom to listen and focus and see what's going on, that you'll help them to ask the right questions, to find the right documents, hear the right stories, and help them to go at the right pace and to display that tactical patience that's so important in revitalization. Lord, we know you have a plan for us here at these churches, and you've put us here for a reason. Help us to live within that purpose. We pray this in your name. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Replant Bootcamp podcast, where listening to the field will lead you to the future. The Replant Bootcamp podcast is brought to you by Church QuickSight by 180 Digital. With Church QuickSight, you'll get a beautiful, customized website with all the features you need to help your church grow, a helpful project manager to make sure everything is just how you want it, and the legendary 180 Digital hosting and support to keep things running great. 180 Digital is a team of design, development, and marketing experts who know and love the local church. So go to churchquicksight.com to learn more and get started.